We will hear a bit about Microsoft domain quirks and how they can be exploited. About this, Yakuto will tell us now.
So, hello everyone, welcome to my talk, which is called Domain Computers Have Accounts Too. And in this talk, we will abuse domain accounts to actually be able to own some machines through relink and delegation. And we will be abusing some old quirks, some new quirks, and I hope we will have a lot of fun. Now, I want to start by having a shout out to some guys who basically did all the hard work of figuring out ways to abuse machine accounts. I want to mention specifically these people, which is Lee Christensen, Will Schroeder, Matt Nelson, and Alet Shamir and Durgan. But there are a lot of others that basically over the years spend a lot of time digging into the Active Directory and Microsoft domains. So everybody else who paved way for this research, you did a great job. And I also want to thank my employer because it's nice to be able to do your own research without having to worry about paying the rent. So we will start with a very old technology that's part of Microsoft Active Directory, and that's NTLM. NTLM stands for New Technology Land Manager, and the NT means it was introduced in Windows NT 4.0, which it was introduced in 1996, which incidentally, the protocols are older than I am, so it's a pretty ancient stuff. Now, NTLM is a suite of protocols for security because there's a lot of terminology, a lot of confusing terminology when it comes to NTLM, and we will call NTLM the whole package of different protocols that are used for basically everything you need to be able to communicate on the network securely. So challenge response authentication protocols, signing protocols, the whole package. And NTLM is best known for what's often called the NTLM hash, which is a hash of the user password. And basically, everybody who used Mimikatz probably dumped their own NTLM hash of the password. And there's a lot of talk about pass the hash attacks. But we will not talk about those, because for this talk, the most important thing from NTLM is the challenge response protocol. So the way challenge response protocols work in general is that there is a shared secret between the client and the server. So there is something both of them know, and therefore both of them can do a calculation based on some random challenge, and both of them will get the same results if they really know the same secret. So the way it works, as can be seen from this diagram, is that when the client wants to authenticate to the server sends back a random 32-bit number in this case, which is the server challenge, and both of them do the same calculation with the shared secret, which in this case is the hash of the user's password, and hopefully they will come to the same result. So then the client sends the answer to the challenge to the server, and the server can verify it. And in version 2, there is also a voluntary client challenge step. So also, not only the server can be sure that the client knows the secret, but also the client can verify that the server knows the secret as well. Now, throughout this presentation, I will have some footnotes. These are things that I think are interesting, but are out of the scope for this talk. So it's more like something that you can later check out when you check the slide deck or read if I'm talking about something you already know. So now the thing about challenge response protocols is that they are often vulnerable to what's called a relaying attack. And NTLM is unfortunately no different. So how does relaying work? What's important from this diagram is that, as you can see, the first thing that actually happens is that the client attempts to authenticate to the attacker, which is the skull in the middle. So the client goes to the attacker and says, I want to authenticate to you using NetNTLM. And the attacker, instead of generating a random challenge, instead asks for the challenge a server, it basically wants to authenticate to without knowing the shared secret. And so it gets its own server challenge, a random one, and then it just forwards it to the client, using it as an oracle for calculating responses to the challenge. So the client, as it wanted to connect to the attacker, it will happily comply, it will calculate the answer to the challenge, send it to the attacker, and the attacker can then forward it to the server. Now, obviously, it can completely, even if there is a random client challenge, it can completely ignore it. It's, we, as an attacker, don't care whether the server really knows the secret. We just want to authenticate, and we can just happily kill the connection with the client and said something went wrong. We are connection reset. But, so the two important things to take from this diagram about relaying is that in this scenario, the attacker has absolutely no knowledge of the shared secret. I mean, if the challenge response calculation is vulnerable to, for example, brute forcing, he can try to brute force the secret. But this attack by itself doesn't give the attacker any knowledge about the secret. And the other important thing is that, as I said earlier, the client has to initiate the connection. So, or we have to have another way of forcing the client to connect to us. Now, because this is a pretty big deal and it's been known for quite a while, there is actually a mitigation in NET and DLM, and that is that apart from just being used to prove that you have knowledge of a shared secret, NET and DLM can also derive a session key from the shared secret. So, as I said earlier, because the attacker doesn't know the shared secret, he can't calculate the session key. There's no way he can guess it from the challenge response protocol. And when signing is enforced or signing is negotiated between the two sides, every message going through must be signed with that session key. So you can relay authentication. It will work. It will go through fine. But after that, you can't basically create your own messages or even tamper with messages coming from the client because you have you don't have any knowledge of the session key, and therefore you can sign any messages. However, the interesting quirk is that not all protocols are support signing, so you can't force signing for all protocols. The most common protocols that are used with NTLM authentication, which is SMB and LDAP, which is used for accessing the Active Directory, the properties of objects and user accounts, etc., they do support signing, but HTTP doesn't at all. So if you somehow force a client to try to connect to you over HTTP and authenticate using NET NTLM, you can be sure that it won't ever ask for signing because it doesn't even attempt to ask for signing over HTTP. And another interesting thing about this is the first message that's actually sent, which is the negotiation message, the NTLM SSP negotiate, contains a bitmask of requested security features. It's the way how the client and server agree on how strong encryption they will use, etc. So it can, for example, say, I don't want to do signing ever, or I want to do signing if you can, or I need signing, don't even bother answering if you don't support it. And willingness to use the first version of NET NTLM, which is way weaker than the version 2. And the important thing is this message contains again, a signature again based on the shared secret called the MIC, the message integrity code, and therefore cannot be easily tampered. And again, say for implementation bugs, because recently there was a drop the mic vulnerability that basically allowed you to completely throw away the message integrity code, but that was a bug and was promptly fixed. So it shouldn't be possible. Which means you can't easily downgrade a request for signing, not only when the signing is enforced, but for example, if for SMB you just have a client that says, hey, if you can do signing, do it please, then you can only relay this message completely, even with this bit set. And therefore, if also the server can do signing, they will negotiate it even when you are man in the middle in their connection. So even if the signing is only requested, you are basically screwed and can't communicate easily, which is, again, why why the fact that HTTP doesn't support signing is so important for us, because it gives us a primitive that allows us to relay easily without having to worry about negotiation signing. And so now, this was a primer on NTLM and NTLM relaying, and now let's get to the title of the talk, which is Domain Computers Have Accounts Too. And actually, every machine that's joined to a domain has its own account in Active Directory. So I will, again, the terminology is kind of awkward here, but I will be using account to actually refer to an item that's actually in the Active Directory, and I will be using user accounts for accounts that are actually for users, and machine accounts for accounts that are actually representing machines. And the way you can recognize these accounts is that the name of the account always ends with a dollar. So for example, if you have a desktop 8KCGBF6 registered in the domain, it will have an account with this name with the dollar sign at the end. Now, there are not many differences between user accounts and machine accounts. The most important difference is that the machine accounts have very long, I think it's like 32 characters, randomly generated passwords, which can even contain invalid UTF-16 characters. So it's basically 64 bytes random, or maybe 32 bytes. I'm not really sure here. But the point is, it's too long to brute force. So guessing machine account passwords is basically impossible. But apart from that, it can do all the things that regular accounts can do. So it can authenticate using NTLM. It can get Kerberos tickets, which we will talk about in a minute. And it can be a victim of NTLM relaying. So it can be a victim of the attack I showed before. So the big question is, can we own a computer by relaying its machine credentials? Let's say we have a way of forcing the computer to authenticate to us using its machine credentials, and we can relay it somewhere. Where do we relay it to own the computer? Is there even such a way? And this was an open question for a long time. And just recently, in last year and this year, we started to see some answers for it. And to be able to answer this question, we have to look at another authentication or another security protocol that's used on Microsoft domains, and that is Kerberos. Now, Kerberos is a protocol for distribution of symmetric keys. So it's a very complex beast, basically. It was designed by in MIT, and then Microsoft added a lot of its own stuff to it. And it's a very complex beast. So this is basically the topic that I will be simplifying the most. And we will not care about distributing any keys, etc. We will just care about the authentication factor of this protocol. And so bear with me as I try to explain the basics, and I hope I will not end up like Swift on security. So the first thing that you need to know about is what a TGT is. It's a mouthful. It's a ticket granting ticket. And it's basically a proof that you authenticated that you can later use to request tickets for services. So the favorite InfoSec analogy here is an analogy with an amusement park. So if you come to an amusement park and ask for a ticket for the whole day, for all the attractions, you can basically buy it, and this is what is your TGT. And later, when you want to get, for example, coins for bumper cars or something, you just go to the booth, present your whole day ticket, and they will give you coins for the car ride, which is the ticket for the service. So, and basically, why you want to use a TGT is that you can only once authenticate using your password or using your password hash, etc. And then you have this ticket that doesn't have any relation to the user's password that you can just go around and pass to everybody. And your identity only needs to be checked once. So you only need to authenticate once. And all the other steps can be authorization. So only can this user access this, not is it really that user. So the way of getting a TGT is very simple. You just ask for a TGT. The Kerberos distribution center says that you need to pre-authenticate. So you, again, send another request, this time sending a password hash or a key or something that basically can prove who you are. And you get your TGT. Now, the other part of Kerberos after you have a TGT are services. And don't think about services as in Windows services, which again, the terminology sucks, but think about different protocols. So for example, LDAP is a service, HTTP is a service, SIFS, which is another name for SMB file sharing, is a service. And every such service has an SPN, or a service principal name, which is basically a unique identifier used in the domain for this particular service that you want to authenticate to. So some examples of SPNs are ldap/dc.domain.com, which is the LDAP service on the domain controller, or safe-set-files-domain.com, which is basically a file sharing service on a file sharing server. So now when you already have a TGD, authenticated to a service is simple. You just go to the Kerberos Distribution Center, ask for a ticket for example, safe-files-domain.com, prove yourself with the TGT, and the Kerberos Distribution Center checks your TGT that is basically correct and gives you back a ticket that you can use to authenticate to the server, to the files-domain.com server. As I said earlier, as Kerberos is more like a key distribution protocol, you also, apart from the of the authentication part, you also get the key that you are supposed to use to encrypt the communication, but that's not important for this talk. So one thing that is common to all complex and mature, or I don't know how you want to call it, protocols that take care of authentication, is that they often want to provide some way of delegation or impersonation, so some primitive that allows you to pretend to be someone you really are not. And this is useful, they say it is useful for single sign-on, so for example, when you connect to a server and that server wants to, for example, connect to a backup server, and then it can use your credentials. So it seems like if you directly connected to it and all of the authorization, all of the ACLs you have set up, basically work. And so it's something that these protocols often do. And Kerberos, or at least the Microsoft implementation of Kerberos, is no different. And the most powerful delegation is so-called unconstrained delegation. It even had it in its name. And what it basically means that if you set up a service or set up a machine, therefore all services on that machine, for unconstrained delegation, it means that every ticket that the KDC generates for this machine contains the TGT of the original user, such that the service can decrypt it. Therefore, once you actually give this ticket, pass this ticket to the server you want to connect to, it can decrypt it, and it can do everything it would be able to do as if it authenticated with a password. It basically has the master ticket, the ticket granting ticket. It basically has a copy of your proof of who you are. However, and this is very sensible, is that by default, this is something only domain administrator can set up, because basically when you compromise a host that has unconstrained delegation allowed, every time you get somebody to authenticate to you, you basically stole their credentials, or basically you can go around and tell everybody that I am domain administrator and they will believe you. So I, again, prepared a small diagram how it works. It's almost the same as getting regular tickets, but this time the KDC actually includes the TGT in the response. But as it's encrypted with a key of the target, you as a client can't really tell whether the TGT is in it or isn't in it. You just pass it to the server, and it can see, oh, he gave me a TGT, that's nice. And this is very powerful, but also very dangerous, because basically when you trust somebody for unconstrained delegation, they can go around your domain and pretend to be anybody to everyone else. So Microsoft introduced what they call constrained delegation, or S4U2 proxy. And this time, actually, the trust is not like a global whole domain thing, but the trust is set up between two services. Actually, in the Microsoft implementation, it's most often set between two machines, which basically means that if PCA trusts PCB, then every service on PCA trusts every service on PCB. And it works very similarly, but this time there's no TGT passing, because if you pass your TGT to somebody, there's no way anybody can limit you on what you can do. But this time, if the trusted service gets a forwardable ticket that actually authenticates user for for the trusted service, it can ask the KDC to turn it into a ticket, authenticated the same user, but for the trustee machine. So in the example we had before, when a user sends a ticket to CIFS at PCB, the service can take this ticket, use it as a proof that the user actually accessed it, go to the KDC and get the ticket for LDAP at PCA, which basically trusts all tickets from PCB. The way it looks like in a diagram is that, yeah, the ticket exchange is the same as always, but now let's pretend that, for example, files.domain.com has a service that basically allows you to get an older version of the file, and it wants to preserve all ACLs, etc. So the backup.domain.com trusts all tickets from files.domain.com. So the files then says, I have this ticket that authorizes user to access me. Please give me a ticket that authorizes the same user to access the backup server. And as the constraint delegation is set up, the KDC basically says, yeah, it's fine. OK, here is your ticket. And the files.domain.com can go to the backup.domain.com and basically pretend to be you. And so with constraint delegation, originally, we had the same limitation as with the unconstrained delegation. It was just way more granular. And that is only domain administrator can set it. And the old way of setting it up was that it was set on the trusted machine side. However, I don't know when, but recently, maybe 2016 or something like that, Microsoft added a so-called resource-based constraint delegation, which means that the trustee can now set constraint delegation for itself. So if I am a victim machine, I can basically go to the LDAP server and say, hey, I want to trust all tickets that come from the attacker machine. And this is the important primitive that we will be using to be able to turn relaying of machine accounts into something useful. Because once we are able to relay the authentication of the victim machine account to the domain controller, we can basically then set it to trust any other computer in the domain. And there's still a piece missing, which is actually a funny quirk that at the first sight looks innocent, but will basically allow us to do anything we want. It's that there's another, it's not delegation as much as it is a way to basically do protocol transition, which what basically it means is that often when you are a service or you are a machine and you have a ticket that, for example, authenticates to Samba or something, you can just create a ticket for the user for any other services you offer from FinAir. So basically, the way it works is that when you are a service, you can always go to the KDC and say, "Hi, I want to create a ticket that authenticates administrator to myself." And what's more important for us, as these tickets work as proof for you to proxy. So you can basically take this ticket that you generated out of FinAir without any credentials, without any password, and say, turn this into a ticket to another machine that trusts me, and it works. So this brings us to our plan of attack. So the plan of attack is we own any domain join machine because we need somebody who can actually use the S4U to self to create tickets out of thin air. So we own a machine that has any service, which is basically any machine. And then we find the victim machine, get it to authenticate to us using NTLM, relay this authentication that it sent us to LDAP and use it to configure so that the victim trusts all tickets that come from the attacker. And now, as we own the attacker, we can just get the TGT for the attacker dollar account, the machine account. We can use S4U to self to generate an administrator that allows for the attacker machine to that authenticates administrator to the attacker machine, and then we can again go to the KDC and use S4U to proxy to turn this into an administrator ticket for the victim. So a single relay, and we have basically we can authenticate as an administrator to any victim machine. Now, I talked about the last four points pretty thoroughly, so I want to focus now on the first two points. So how can we own any domain joint machine? Now, There is a funny thing in the Active Directory is that by default, all accounts and even machine accounts can up to 5 machines to the domain with just their credentials. So, I mean, every sensible administrator disabled this. I have yet to see a production domain that actually has this still enabled. But if you find a domain with this enabled, you can just go to the domain controller, ask it to add the machine, and it will happily do it, and it's everything you need. But and the funny thing is that, as I said, even machine accounts can add machines, and these machine accounts can then add machines. So if you are very clever, you can basically skip the first step, and when you are in the third step and you are relaying the victim credentials to LDAP, you can use LDAP to first create the attacker controller machine, generate a new one, and then set the trusting. So you can do just one relaying and basically create a machine and set it as trusted. And the other way is like the old ways. So you find an old Windows server that is vulnerable to Eternal Blue, or you, for example, boot Kali on a provided workstation and steal its credentials as long as it's not encrypted with BitLocker. Now, all these steps were pretty easy, and pretty often they are achievable. But the hard part that remains is getting authentication from machines, which is the part where we still need more powerful primitives. So if you have any idea how to do this, you can basically you can tell us, and we'll be happy, because right now the best ways we have are man-in-the-middle attacks, which are kind of quirky. So the best one that always so far worked for me is a physical man-in-the-middle, where you literally take the machine when you have physical access to it and reconnect it to your computer, which runs a DHCP server, tells it you're the DNS server, and resolves every single address to your attacker computer. And once you reboot the machine, Windows eventually tries to download something. Most often, I've seen some Windows update certificates, which for some reason it thinks it's a good idea to download using HTTP, and authenticates using machine credentials, as after the reboot, there are no other credentials to use so far, so it will happily authenticate using them. Another way of achieving a man-in-the-middle position in this way is actually remotely, not physically, is MITM6, which is an interesting project where if the network where you are doesn't have IPv6 set up at all, you can basically most of the Windows machines are set up so they still try to look for IPv6 DHCP servers. So you can just start your own DHCP6 servers and again tell everybody you're the DNS server, as Windows prefers IPv6 over IPv4, they will probably use you instead of the IPv4 DNS server that is actually meant to be used in the domain. There are also some funny and weird primitives for getting authentication from machines. One of them is changing your lock screen or profile picture, because for some reason, when you change your profile picture, it's actually downloaded using the machine account, and there is a protocol called DAF, which is basically file access over HTTP. So it's reliable, if you know what I mean. And so you can just change your lock screen to something like webdav-relay@80/folder/dummy-jpg, and again, the machine will try to authenticate to your webdav-relay, and you can then relay the credentials. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is also, I think, pretty interesting, and it's the printer bug, where bug is in quotes because Microsoft says that it's by design and it's a feature. There's this mouthful remote procedure call called RPC remote find first printer change notification X. And what this does is basically it asks the computer to register yourself as register some other server as a notification listener. So if anything changes about any printer, it will send you a message and tell you, for example, this printer is out of paper. Now, as this works over, as this notification goes over SMB, it basically means that when you register yourself on a remote machine as a notification handler, it will try to connect with you over SMB using the machine account. So yeah, if I register my attacker machine as a notification receiver, I will get an SMB connection. Now, most configurations at least ask for signing in the negotiation, so it's usually not reliable to LDAP as reliable reliable to LDAP, which supports signing. So when the machine asks for it, then the LDAP will happily want signed messages, and you will not be able to craft your own messages. Now, I've been looking into the available exploits, and they basically do two calls. They do open printer, and they do the change notification registration. And the open printer is basically you need to get a handle first before you can do the other calls. And what it does is that it opens the target machine as the printer, not your listener, which is kind of confusing. But basically, the way it works is that if you want to get an authentication from victim, you connect to the victim, you open printer the victim, and then you register as a change notification your own computer, your attacker computer. And I've been reading the RPRN protocol docs, and I found something interesting, which is the printer name that the open printer accepts is actually defined as follows, where not only you have the regular thing you would expect is server name and local printer name, but there's also apparently something called a web print server that works over HTTP. So I was like, yeah, HTTP is better over SMB. I wonder what happens if I change the open printer from self to attacker/printer/random/.printer. And I've started my relaying software, and this is basically the log that it outputted. I'm sorry for the censorship, but I wanted this to be authentic. So this is really the first time I saw it. And what I saw here is I skipped through two lines, and I saw like, hey, it received a HTTP connection, and then it tried to, here is the authentication as the machine account. So I was like, hey, it's authenticating over HTTP as the machine account. The relay failed for some reason, but this is huge. So I registered a talk at a CCC camp, but it turns out last week, I was trying to reproduce this like crazy over and over, but couldn't. And turns out what really happened is that these two lines I blacked out here are really what's important, and that that the connection actually came from, that the credentials actually came over SMB, not over HTTP. So what happened? I spent a lot of time debugging this, and it turns out, yeah, I was just quickly hacking, and I left the call to the change notification registration unmodified. So the remote machine really connected over HTTP in the open printer call, but it didn't send any meaningful credentials over that. It basically authenticated as a null user with a null password, which is not really useful. But after that, as I didn't change the printer change notification registration at all, it did the exploiting regular SMB call, and it sent over its credentials, and that's what I saw in the log. So as it was multi-threaded, I wasn't able to connect it with either the HTTP or the SMB connection. So unfortunately, this looks to be like a dead end, and that we don't have a remote attack that can actually make machines authenticated to us using HTTP. So this all sounds great and theoretical, but I actually have a demo for this. So hopefully, if the demo gods approve of this, we will first abuse the adding a machine. We will then use the physical man in the middle to get the victim to authenticate to our Kali machine. And we will relay these credentials, use them to configure to trust the machine we just added to the domain, and then do the whole impersonation delegation attack. So. What I have here is a victim machine, which is called Desktop 83 BNFM. Yeah, I know it's a weird name, but we'll do. And I have a Kali machine that has two network cards. One of them is connected to the domain, and one of them is actually where I've set up the DHCP to give IP addresses and to say I'm the router and I'm the domain name server. So first, what I want to do is at the computer, as I've said, so I can just use credentials. Imagine that I'm, for example, in a pen test, so I have an unprivileged account to log into the domain machine, to the DC. So I just say I want to add a random computer, and it happily, because it's enabled, it happily created a random desktop machine with this password, which, yeah. So I now have a machine in the domain. So what I want to do next is set up the DNS server. I will use Responder for that. I only run it as a DNS server, so all the SMB and HTTP servers are turned off. And also, I will start up the NTLM RelayX, where I say I want to relay to LDAP on the domain computer. I want to delegate access to the, and here I need to type the machine I just edit. So I want to delegate access to this one. So now I just do what I said I will do. I reconnect the machine to the network where I have set up my DHCP server, and I reboot. Now there are already some, as you can see, there are some already some Windows Update HTTP requests, which why in 2019 Windows Update is happily downloading over HTTP is beyond me. But we have to wait after the reboot, so there's no other account than the machine account available. So we wait for a while. Windows boots. Yeah, and so now, as you can see, we already successfully, it's somewhere here, we already successfully relayed these credentials as the target, which is the 83BN, and there it says already performed, so yeah. Somewhere here in the log there will be, yeah. So the desktop XHP which we added can now successfully impersonate users on the target via S4U2 proxy. So this is everything we basically need to do. So now let me just reconnect the target machine back to the domain. So it sees the domain controller and actually verify that the ticket I give it is correct. And so now there's a helpful script in Impacket that allows you to do all the TGT and S4U2 self and S4U2 proxy. And so I just need to do get ST, which I say, I want a ticket for SIFS, which is Samba, at the victim desktop, which is the 83BNFM. I want to impersonate administrator. And here I basically say that I want to authenticate as the machine I edit again, which is this one. And this is the password for the machine. And bam, I have a ticket that actually impersonates administrator for the machine. So now I can just do a secrets dump where I just say I want to use this cached ticket. And I don't want to authenticate using password. And this is the victim. And when I now run it, nothing happens. Yeah, this is probably some. I accidentally connected the wrong network. This needs to be on VMinet 7, not VMinet 8, which I will quickly fix. Numbers. And now try again. And bam, here are your credentials. So we successfully impersonate administrator to the target machine. So yeah, this is not good. So how can we mitigate? The problem is that most of the chain is by design. It's something that's in Kerberos. That is meant to be in Kerberos that Microsoft really thinks is useful. And Microsoft would have to change that. For example, one thing I think would be clever is to somehow prohibit S4U2 self tickets to be used as a proof for S4U2 proxy. But Microsoft is currently not willing to do that. So the only real mitigation is you have now right now is preventing relaying. So force signing for all protocols where it is available, and not only ask for it, but actually force it, and ban NTLM authorization where not available, so over HTTP. And actually, as I said, this is very new. So last week, Microsoft actually released an advisory that recommends that you turn on LDAP signing specifically to stop these attacks that were coming out right now. So and one thing you can do as a defense in dev measure is that you can add critical users to the protected users group, or at least give them username delegated, which prevents most of the delegation attacks. And so this is the end of the presentation. As you can see, epic fail happened. Basically, the reason I registered this talk was that I thought I had an exploit that I didn't have, but such is life. But I'd be more than happy to talk to you later here at the CC camp or DM me at Twitter at Tiago too. And we are still looking for new ways to force remote machines to authenticate to us using their machine credentials, as this is the last thing we are missing to have a really powerful, really potent attack chain. So that's it. And do you have any questions?
Yeah, that's right. I would say let's hear a warm round of applause for this guy. Are there any questions? We have two question angels in the middle. Anybody can sit up, go up. Is there a question from the internet?
Nope.
No questions from the internet. No questions from the audience? No one? You have 3, 2, 1. Yeah, I guess let's have another warm round of applause. Thank you, Yokota.